know, we're all rounded in our skills, and I think you have to be rounded and flexible to be successful in a job like this, but everybody's, you know, has skill gaps, right? Like, we can't all be a 10 out of 10 in every area, and you have to and you got to have the maturity to know that, right?
Yes.
Jason Hicks, Global CISO at Kudelski Security, joins the podcast to talk about the challenges of managing a security team, coping with scope creep, and the rise of the branded CISO.
So welcome to the Uber Knowledge podcast. With me, I have Jason Hicks, who is with Kudelski Security as an advisory CISO and former Aries Management CISO. Welcome, Jason.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me. So let's start off with a report that your group published, which is focused on the security leadership talent gap. There's an interesting statistic where you mentioned about 82% of those interviewed say communication skills are critical versus just 52% who believe hands-on experience in technologies is critical. So I have two questions coming from this. First one is, were you individually surprised by this widespread awareness of the critical need for communication, number one? And number two is, why is this communication so critical today more than ever for aspiring CISOs who probably may have thought about a technical path to grow up and not necessarily focused on communication?
I think those are really good observations, and it's certainly, so the awareness didn't really surprise me, having, you know, obviously having been an AMA CISO now, right? Yeah. I think it's, a lot of us came up on the technical side of the house, right? If not most of us. And it's always been a challenge for folks to sort of learn how to speak in the language the business understands, right? And to sort of win, if you will, from a security delivery standpoint and from a program standpoint, you know, you really have to be able to speak in those terms, right? And we've all, you know, seen or participated in meetings where, you know, that just didn't happen. And I think for CISOs, we've all sort of learned the hard way that, you know, communication is a critical skill for me to be successful and for my program to be successful, right? If I can't capture mind share from the business and convince, you know, the business that, you know, what we're doing is the right thing to do, you know, you're just not going to get the funding or the resources that you need to be successful, or the support that you need to be successful. And I think that's, you know, one of the critical things that you sort of learn by doing. And so I think the awareness is certainly there. And I think for aspiring CISOs, you know, the days where you could be the smartest, you know, technical person and, you know, be a CISO are probably over, right? Mm-hmm. At any large organization, right? I mean, now you're getting a lot of business people that are moving into CISO roles that maybe don't have a lot of security experience or at the CSO level. And then you've also just have a lot of, you know, the expectations have changed, right? And I think it's pretty much impossible to be successful without those skills.
So touching a little bit about what you mentioned earlier about business people getting into CISO roles, is there still that mentality of you have to be one in order to lead one, right? So if you have a team of people who are deep and technical and you don't have the technical skills, how does somebody actually go about being credible within his or her own organization?
It's really hard to take somebody with out any of those technical skills and have them be a credible leader. And I mean, certainly, you know, some folks have a high learning capacity. And I think, you know, we've certainly seen organizations where folks have come out of the business side. I think to do that, they'd have to have a very strong, you know, deputy CISO that is very technical and can sort of carry the technical water, if you will, with their staff. Because, you know, much like, you see on the law enforcement side, right? They want to have, you know, sworn people leading sworn people kind of thing, right? Because how can you relate to, you know, what I'm going through if you haven't done it, right? And I think it's really hard to win the hearts and minds of, you know, a team if you don't have those, that background. And the other challenge I think for you too is, you know, you have to sort of have, certainly I'm not the guy with the deepest, you know, firewall knowledge, right? I'm not picking those products, right? I'm approving those final selections when people are installing things, but I got really sharp people that are doing the analysis. But ultimately I've done, you know, firewall stuff before. I know enough to know if what they're telling me is accurate. If they've sort of, you know, if they've done a holistic and thorough analysis, right? If I didn't have that previous experience, I don't know how I could really arbitrate that, right? You'd sort of have to defer, you know, entirely to somebody with that background. And I think the hardest part about it would be, you know, a lot of, there's a lot of strong personalities in security, right? Especially at the, you know, the engineering and the guys that do malware analysis and sort of the really deep technical side of security. And I think for people like that to really respect and follow somebody, I think it'd be really hard to win their hearts and minds, you know, not having that sort of background, unless I think you were, you know, you were transparent with them and said, hey, you know, I'm here to do, you know, the business aspects of this. We've got, you know, I understand my limitations and, you know, I'm not going to get into your direct business, but, you know, we've got another person who is going to lead our technical work streams, right? And, you know, I'm here to basically secure budget and, you know, deal with politics for you, right? I think if you approached it from that perspective, you'd be okay. But
yeah, so it's a great observation. So talking about something else, which again, I found it very illuminating for me, and I'm sure hopefully the listeners will find it as well, which is the note for aspiring CISOs, including efforts to build reputation, should be consistent and deliberate, including increasing visibility in social media. Like I said, this was eye-opening for me. So where did this come from, and what have you seen successful CISOs do that lead you to talk about them being much more visible to the world outside?
So there's a number of, and I think CISOs fall into different camps, right? You know, some of us, you know, we speak at a conference occasionally, but, you know, maybe your organization isn't super supportive of external outreach, you know, and a lot of boards feel like, you know, if you're out speaking and sort of evangelizing, you know, we become a target basically because of that, right? Like you raise our profile essentially. Now other companies, you know, that's part of their, you know, the persona that they need for a client facing CISO, right? And they've accepted that risk, right? But I think what we're seeing is, you know, there's sort of this concept of a branded CISO out there is what the recruiters would use when they talk about this. But essentially people who have done the work to, you know, some folks, they write books, you know, some people have their own, you know, their own podcasts, for instance, some folks they do a lot of conference speaking. You know, we've got a couple of folks on our side, not so much at the CISO level, but are very involved in, you know, lots of different conference, you know, leadership roles where they're picking content and things like that. So I think it's, you're seeing people sort of trying to brand themselves and sort of, you know, have active conversations on social media. And I think it's a sort of a, how do I expand, you know, the scope of my brand, for lack of a better way to describe it, right? And we're seeing a lot of folks looking at that as a, okay, I'm a, you know, I'm a brand and I need to be, you know, marketable and I need to figure out how I'm going to, you know, maintain mind share. And, you know, I think it's part of it is, you know, you're going after a client facing CISO job, right? You know, that could be a consideration of that organization, right? Because, hey, we want somebody whose name is recognized, who's, you know, the entity they worked for is recognized. I do feel like, though, you're going to have other companies that aren't so supportive of some of this, you know, raising my profile aspect. And then some of the regulated industries, too. I spent a decent amount of time in the finance industry. You know, for me to present at a conference, I had to get, you know, lawyers, investor relations, regulatory. I had to get like 5 sign-offs. Like, it was more work to do that than honestly it was worth. So, you know, you don't have a lot of, like, you won't see a lot of people from like the big FIs doing some of this stuff just because it's just too much work to, you know, to hire somebody just to do all of this kind of stuff so that I can present. But there's definitely people that are spending a lot of time working on sort of their reputation management, if we call it that, right? And I think it certainly factors into, you know, their ability to go out there and get, you know, a role at an organization that's looking for somebody like that. But I also feel like there's no real replacement for experience, right? You know, if you're a large organization and you're looking at candidates, you know, they want somebody that's done this multiple times, you know, versus somebody who's kind of taken their first shot at it. But I do feel like some of the product vendors, some of the, you know, the Bay Area startup sort of organizations would be interested in somebody who's branded themselves like this, because, you know, you're almost bringing credibility to a new organization, right? Like, hey, we're bringing in somebody who's well known and they lend credibility to our nascent organization sort of thing. So I think it's probably a bigger deal depending on the maturity level of the company and sort of what your role is, right? Are you a client facing CISO, or are you an internal CISO, or are you in some sort of hybrid role?
Yeah, so that brings me to another question, which is, you mentioned this briefly, but is it still true that the average tenure of a CISO is what was it last count, 18 months and shrinking, or is there more appetite for realizing that a CISO's head, he or she should not roll every time there's an attack? And has that mind shift happened yet, or is it still, my clock is ticking as soon as I sign on the dotted line?
Well, I think there's a couple of different things that motivate the clock ticking. So yeah, to your point, it's about 18 to 24 months, I think, is the average. And I think it's driven by a couple of different things. In the olden days, right, if there was a breach or a serious incident, you were sort of the first head on the chopping block, right? And I think that has shifted. I wouldn't say that's off the table, but I feel like it's shifted now to, if you have done a good job sort of preparing for that sort of eventuality, and you have all your ducks in a row, and you can tell a compelling story about how you responded successfully to an event, and sort of you've got this almost like wartime general kind of thing going on, mm-hmm. I feel like you'd probably survive depending on the board, right? I mean, there's lots of examples now of people who have survived some of these things, as long as you're not in sort of the Keystone Cop zone, right? We're like, hey, we were asleep at the wheel and something happened and we weren't ready for it. It's unfortunately, you're always sort of in that, I bear the blame, because I'm the leader, right? Whether we've done the things correctly or not. So I feel like that's not completely changed, but it's certainly evolved. It's not an instant kiss of death like it was probably 5 years ago, at least in my approximation from what I've seen. I do think though that, there's a lot of things driving that, 18 to 24 month activity, mm-hmm. right? Some of that's frankly financial, right? There's a shortage of CISOs out there. There's certainly some very compelling financial situations that are being offered to people. I think it's really important for organizations to be cognizant of that and sort of be realistic about that. So, mm-hmm. are we a tier one or a tier three organization? And, we should try to attract someone who is fits that profile, and we can afford, sort of thing, right? If you're you don't want to hire a $1 million person if that's not something that you think is an achievable and sustainable thing, right? Because some of these packages are rather large depending on the entity and the organization. But for every person like that, there's lots of people that are clearly not in that zone. So I think the other thing that drives a lot of that too is just the quality of life and sort of the experience, right? I mean, it's not an easy job, and it's not even always a fun job, right? So it's one of those sort of, if the organization, places that role in the appropriate place and sort of sets it up for success, so it reports to the right person, it's got funding, it's got people, you're effectively compensated, some of these quality of life things around, working conditions and, can I work remotely? How much travel do I have to do? Like all this sort of conglomerates into a retention strategy, right? But it's also, I think, a lot of people come in now with sort of a, I'm going to be here for 2 to 4 years. I will leave you with a functional person you can transition to. In some cases, they're even helping bring in their replacements and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think some of that has evolved too, right? I mean, imagine 10 years ago going to a job interview and talking about how you're going to have a replacement groomed and ready within a certain amount of time, right? You'd have probably gotten walked out of the place, right? So it's an interesting process.
Yeah, so talking about something you just hinted upon, which is the burnout, right? And one of the fascinating pieces in your report, which was a visual also about the scope creep, if you will, from extending into privacy, to physical security, to M&A security. So how real is this ability or inability, if you will, of a CISO to put to still want to kind of be the front-facing single point of accountability when it comes to security, but the scope creep is real and it affects not just him or her, but the organization as well. So what have you seen in terms of successful CISOs navigating this?
That comes back to your first question about communication skills, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important for the organization to sort of understand, because you're the security person, right? It's easy for us to just additionally load things on that sound security-ish, right? And I think it's all about communicating back to the business that, hey, I can take on this additional responsibility, but there's something either has to give or we have to expand my organization to be able to do that, right? So there's costs associated with that. You can't just add two more functions to my area and not allow me to expand my staff to accomplish that, right? So I think the challenge you see people run into is, and again, it's nobody wants to say no, right? It's hard to say no, but it's sort of a situation where I need to be able to sort of delegate more, right? You need to hire more lieutenants, right? I need more, you know, deputy CISO level people who can manage these particular areas, right? So if you give me physical security, I'm going to hire somebody to run that day to day, and I'm going to own it, kind of thing, right? So I think the people I see that are successful look at it like that. You know, I'm expanding my business. This is a new division to my business, and I'm going to hire a, you know, a general manager type person to run that business for me. Where people struggle is they try to wear those five hats, right? Like, okay, so I'm going to be the head of physical security, logical security, M&A security, and I'm going to be in charge of, you know, compliance. Like, there's just not enough hours in the day. And often we aren't necessarily, you know, we're all rounded in our skills. And I think you have to be rounded and flexible to be successful in a job like this, but everybody's, you know, has skill gaps, right? Like, we can't all be a 10 out of 10 in every area, and you have to, and you got to have the maturity to know that, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people, and then I don't know, you talk to a lot more people than I do. Maybe not everybody sees that aspect of it. I think it's hard for a lot of people, I think, to just retrospectively look at yourself and be like, you know what, I'm not really that good at X, right? And I need to hire somebody, and I need to be okay with messaging that to the organization, of course, in a, you know, politically okay way of the, hey, you know, to run this properly, we hired this person and they're going to run this thing and I'm going to own it. And now you feel secure because the other stuff I own is done well and you're happy with that. And, you know, we're going to bring this into the fold. And it's all in the messaging, right? Because unfortunately, perception is reality, and you sort of have to manage all of that. And that's a skill, right? And a lot of folks, if they haven't developed that skill, are not going to be set up for success when, you know, the CEO, COO, CIO, whoever your boss is, calls and says, hey, guess what? You know, this person just quit and now you're going to be in charge of this thing.
Yeah, right. I mean, you mentioned something which is very true, which is authenticity in terms of self-awareness and things that we typically don't talk about. Right? So, Jason, lightning round, 1 minute. What final question, what are the top three issues in your mind as it relates to forward-looking CISOs who are planning for coming out of the pandemic? Three things that they're doing right now.
Well, so three things they're probably doing right now is figuring out what the new normal is going to be from, you know, I'm going to have a much larger remote workforce than I did previously. Are we structured for that? How do I get people back into offices in a secure way? How do I, you know, for instance, a lot of people took equipment home with them probably to work from home, right? When they all start coming back, am I going to get that equipment back? And do I want that equipment back? Right. That's a question probably for somebody in the medical side of the things, but from a loss prevention standpoint, like I'd at least like to know what happened to all that stuff. And then, you know, what are we going to do about travel in general? Right. You know, for a lot of people, travel is a huge part of their business, their role, how they do business. How do I enable my sellers and my business development people to be successful in a world where like they can't now travel? You know, if before they were going to lunch, dinner, and you know, golf 3 days a week, what do we do now? And how do I enable that technologically and still protect our data and make sure those interactions are not painful, right? You know, so it's almost like a joint CIO, CISO problem. Like, how do I enable you to communicate and be effective with your clients and be present without actually being able to be present, right? So those are kind of the three things I think people are really spending a lot of time on right now.
Awesome. So great conversation, Jason. Again, thank you for your insight. I think it's a great report. For people who haven't seen it, I advise you to go to Kudelski Security and take a look at the report. I think it's really good reading. So thanks again, Jason, for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Thank you.